and I just learned the best spell of all.
What's that?
Sleep.
Welcome back to My Alchemical Bromance, podcast about beer and the occult. Tonight, you're going to get some beer, you're going to get some philosophy, you're going to get some excellent backpacking tips. I went up to Gig Harbor to visit Matt Anthony, and we spent the weekend wandering around, exploring, adventuring. We have a long, sort of drawn-out conversation about monism and dualism, which we tried to get into depth about, but I included some links in the show notes so you could go get some background on it and maybe get a little bit more information that Matt and I maybe were not privy to. Sit back, pour yourself a beer, or enjoy your transit ride to work today, and welcome to another episode of My Alchemical Bromance.
So, where are we? What is this place?
We're at Tacoma Brewing here in Tacoma, Washington.
Okay.
Yeah, and we're looking out at the sound, the port of Tacoma.
And so tell it, like, what is it about this place? Like, it's,
I love it. Like, it's one dude, Morgan. It's like a two-barrel system. Very bootstrapped, but he's just doing really killer IPAs, like this Cedar IPA.
This thing is called the
Cedro Deluxe.
Cedro Deluxe.
It's a Brett IPA with aged on Spanish cedar.
So cedar is kind of funny. Like, the nose is super punchy. Like, it really kind of runs away with you. Like, it's very, very strong. My first reaction is it smelled almost like turpentine to me.
Really?
I don't know. Maybe I don't remember what turpentine smells
like. Turpentine is not a pleasant smell.
The smell was so intense that I didn't know how to react to it at first. My nose was overpowered with all sorts of things that I didn't know how to identify.
I love it because it's like super, like what you expect from cedar, but also a musky, but not in an unpleasant sense for me anyway.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I guess after the initial shock wore off, it wasn't so unpleasant, and I enjoyed... So, I mean, cedar itself, it's sour, right? So I guess the best way for me to think about cedar is to compare it to oak, which I think everybody's familiar with if they're into beer tasting. Mm-hmm. So oak has kind of a sweetness to it and kind of a dry tartness to it. I wouldn't call it tart.
Tart.
But a dryness, right? Almost like it helps tannins. Tannins do well in oak.
Yeah, a lot of times... Depending on the toast level, but usually an oak will get a little vanilla, sometimes a little coconut oil taste.
Right. So there's, but cedar on the other hand is
it's a brighter.
I feel like there is a lot of bitterness that comes out of cedar, right?
I look at that. Maybe for you, what I get is like a brightness and a punchiness,
uh-huh.
and a clarity, whereas oaky is more warm and cool.
I guess to me, like, cedar has a really particular smell in general. Like, you can just pick up a piece of cedar or be around a cedar tree or, you know, crush cedar needles in your hand and smell them. And cedar has a smell. And oak, to me, doesn't. So when you talk to me about, like, oak, I don't know what an oak tree smells like. I've been around a ton of oak trees, and they never have a smell to me.
I don't know what an oak tree smells like, but, like, oak barrels. Even before they have spirits in them or beer.
That's true. I guess they...
Like, the toast really changes how...
Very few people will have been around that before.
That's true.
I feel like, at least in the Pacific Northwest, everybody's seen a cedar bush or a cedar tree and has been near cedar and has an idea of what that smell is. Or even, like, cedar houses or cedar planking. Like, cedar just... It, like... smells.
Because even oak walnut...
And not a bad smell. I love the smell of cedar.
We have oak, especially if you barbecued, like you'd buy post oak.
Oh, that's true.
But it's got a very neutral... It smells like generic wood.
Yeah.
Until it's toasted.
But I feel like this tastes the way I would expect cedar to come through something. Mm-hmm. You know, like this... I don't know that I would guess cedar if I'd been told, but there's a cedary... There's an unsurprising cedariness here that I really like.
But I think the Brett... is what really makes this beer pop. It's the interplay between the Brett and the cedar. Because I think if you just had like a straight IPA on cedar, I don't know that it wouldn't work as well.
I think I can taste that. I think I taste now the brightness that you were talking about. Like,
it's a bright, sharp.
Yeah.
Whereas oak is warm and rounded.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I think that that's,
because these are all spectrum terms, so I don't know.
What are spectrum terms? Oh, like autism spectrum terms?
Yeah, because I had described things in a way, somewhere where Amy's like, you're talking spectrum. I don't know what you're talking about.
I think those make sense, though. I mean,
yeah, I feel like,
because when you listen to people talk about, when people taste stuff, the only words we have for taste are, you know, we have like really simple words for taste. Everything else is metaphorical. So, I mean, I think about that, too. I think about taste as being full, or taste being rounded, or taste being sharp. You know, sharp is... So I don't know that they're necessarily spectrum terms. I think that those...
I didn't think they were either.
They're poetic. They're metaphorical, poetic terms. Like, good tasting... Describing a good tasting is poetry. It's like taking the poetry of one sense and translating into it into words. I totally get that. Yeah, this is... This is definitely a piece of art. I really like this. This is really good. Tacoma Brewing Company. Okay. All right, so I think what we should talk about on this podcast episode is monism versus dualism. And maybe we should start off, like, I kind of want to know, we talked about this in the car last night a little bit, but can you tell me what you think monism, your definition of monism and dualism? Let's start with, should we start with dualism?
Yeah. And these are my definitions.
Yeah.
Like,
that's what, because when we were talking about it last night and we talked about it in the past, I guess I've always gotten this impression that, like, my interpretation of dualism or my feeling about dualism isn't really the same as yours. And it might just be that nobody has the same, like, we all have a different way of looking at it. There might be different ways of approaching dualism and experiencing it. So what do you think it is?
For me, it's dualism is anything where there's any sense of separation between you and anything. So, like, for me, what we were talking about last night, Western test, like, all of Western esotericism is dualistic. There may be some non-dualistic aspects, but it's essentially dualistic because there's this idea, like, you have to do this work to reach this thing. Whereas non-dualism, no, because there was never any separation to begin with, that there's no need to work towards the unification with something whenever you're already unified with it because you are it.
Okay. I guess I'm not really sure that... I would disagree with you about the idea that the Western mystery tradition is all about dualism. I think that some of it is about escaping that feeling. But I'd say that Western society is definitely about dualism. Like, we teach that in Western society. I think that that's something that we teach.
I think, like, Hermeticism flirts with non-dualism.
Yeah, and I think but you look at, like, Kabbalah or something like that, and it is, you know, the whole idea in Kabbalah is that dualism is a trap that we're trying to escape, and you want to get back to the monistic point of view.
But even then, even within Kabbalah, you're still, even with the tree.
Well, the tree is.
There are different layers and levels. Whenever there's.
But it's layers and levels of. But it's a fake separation, right? You know, so like in Kabbalah, you have this idea of healing the tree because the dualism is a myth. The dualism is fake. It's an artificial system set up so that divinity observes itself, but it's not real. The dualism is not what's really happening. That's an illusion. And I think that happens a little bit in, I don't know, Hermeticism, it's tough to say, but... Well, I don't want to... So then what would a monistic point of view look like to you? Like, how would that work? Do you have an example, or do you have, like, a definition or something?
Anything I say is going to sound really trite.
That's okay.
We're not fleshed out. It's a complete lack of separation. Like, there's no... Any idea of separation between you and anything is a falsehood, because there is no division. It's just like whenever you think in terms of your body, like, at a cellular level, there is a cell. Okay, but cells are better. Like, your body is made of, like, cells and bacteria.
Yeah, yeah.
At what point does all that become you.
Yeah. And then even
there's no division. Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like, and then even on a lower level, like, at what point is there a line between, like, this is you, this is your body, and this is not your body? Like, even then, you're constantly trading matter and energy with everything around you, you know? So you exist in... I think that's a really interesting way to look at it. But in that case, so like, what the Western mystery tradition sometimes talks about, like, killing your ego, or getting rid of your ego, or surpassing the ego, which I think is new, right? Like, that's a post-Jung, post-Freud sort of idea. But
which was helpful for me for a little bit, but I don't... Even that...
Yeah,
but that also ties into my idea, like, now of my view of consciousness and my view of free will have completely changed now as well. So the idea of the id, ego, and superego sound pretty silly to me now too.
I agree that those sound really silly,
but they were helpful at one point.
I mean, well, one of the things I talked about that we were talking about in the car last night was in the Corpus Hermeticum. Brian Kopenhauer, who's one of the modern translators of that, was discussing that he thought there was a dual theology set there, where there is dualism in some of the tracts, but there's a non-dualism in other tracts, and he thought that it would be sort of an initiatory revelation where you would originally get initiated and be talking about the dualism and, you know, all this, but then later be taught monism. And I don't know. I mean, I find it to be a really strange concept, because it's not... So, you know, like, the intellectual or psychological school of magic teaches that everything exists in your head. You know, when you contact demons or when you do any of this stuff, it's all just in your head. Which is interesting, but... and maybe a non-dualist view? I don't know how that interacts with it. I was thinking about that earlier. Like, how do those two things interact?
But even all of reality, from a neurologic standpoint, is in your head.
Yeah.
It's all...
Maybe. There's a lot of stuff that we can observe.
No, I know.
That observation, still, or the result of the observation, is in our head.
I don't mean that from, like, a solipsist point of view. But
right, okay. So where are we going next?
Olympia. We're probably going to go to Three Magnets.
Three Magnets. That reminds me of Pokemon. There's a Pokemon that has, like, magnets sticking out of its head. Three, I think. One out of each.
Magnetar?
Yeah. Charamag?
Magnazar.
Magnachu.
Magnachu.
Are we in a TV episode?
I don't know what's happening.
Okay, cool. Me neither.
They have some product.
Is he doing video on his little phone?
Huh?
On his little camera thing?
Yeah, that's how I shoot video on a DSLR.
Really?
Yeah, like a lot
Does
of stuff
work?
Shown on a DSLR. Oh, beautifully.
Huh.
Yeah, that was a revolution in the video world.
Yeah.
Whenever Nikon, like...
Yeah?
Put out a DSLR that had incredible video function, just as like a side feature.
Yeah.
All like video world jumped on it, like, oh my god, this looks better than any video camera that's out here.
Really?
So, like, Canon put out a camera, this is like all 2009, revolutionized the video space.
That's crazy.
Yeah, like, most DSLRs shoot better than any video camera did. Now, like, Canon's, like, other companies have updated their stuff to where the video cameras took in a lot of the features. Like, you got real film quality from video for the first time when DSLR started shooting video. Whereas before, it just looked like video. Yeah, like 24 frames per second, you had this nice depth of field, full frame sensor, better dynamic range.
Okay, now some dude's gonna walk in and they're all gonna be like, it's Bad Bart. It's Mongo.
It's the Fratellis.
Oh no, it's Mongo! Oh, wow, I'm really plowing through this beer. I guess that means I like it.
You tried the Broken Window.
Uh-huh. What else do you think? Is there anything else I should try here?
I haven't had that one yet.
I don't want another one of those. You're pointing to the Hazers to Stun, a hazy triple IPA. 12 to 14%. That's too hairy for me right now. I just had a...
Then do the Broken Window.
I already had the Broken Window.
No. Then Mo.
Mo? All right, I'm gonna go get a Mo. I think I made a mistake. Well, I accidentally got a pint.
Oh. We have an hour drive to Olympia, so...
All right, cool. Maybe an hour and 20 with all the peeing I'll have to do.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Had some pretzels. My palate's doing good. Oh, shit. That has such a good nose on it.
The Mo?
Oh, yeah.
I tried it. I was doing a month. So grassy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, my God. That is a great pale ale. I love that.
What's crazy is that, yeah, even 10 years ago, that would have been considered an IPA.
That's true. I mean, it is hoppy, but it's mostly flavor hops. Like, it's not extra bitter.
No.
I mean, it's got, like, this really clean... Yeah, I mean, grass is a good word for it, and there's, like, this underlying sweetness. Everything is really nicely balanced. And it tastes fresh. It tastes clean. It tastes with a lot of flavor, so there's, like, kind of a bright, malty deliciousness coming through. None of it's cloying. None of it's sweet. It's not overly hot. Like, this is the sort of beer that it would be perfect with or without pizza.
Yes. Which, yeah. I'm glad. That's one of the... He's canning that one.
Oh, really?
And the Broken Window.
Was it... I mean, I would love to have this in cans. This tastes... Yeah.
The Great Hammock Beer.
So what did we... Tell our audience, our lovely, lovely fans, all 250 of them. We've got a lot of... We're getting good listens now.
It's awesome. Even if we just had 5, I'd be still grateful for the 5. Like...
Even if we had 5 and one of them was a stalker. But tell him what we learned about the canning. So he was just talking about the brewer.
Did we learn something about canning?
We learned something about these guys getting canned, about Tacoma Brewing getting canned.
Oh, yeah. He's having a mobile canner come in this week.
That's right.
Through his first run of cans ever.
And he just got his printed cans, which means he's doing a big run.
I think they're still... Are they printed or are they shrink sleeve?
It was hard to tell. I guess they kind of look shrink sleeve.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still pretty exciting. So if you're in Washington...
He's actually doing I just checked on Facebook, a can release... Well, I don't think this episode will be out by then, but like, he's doing a can release party.
Maybe your next episode.
The 4th and 5th of May.
Oh, so yeah, you're missing it. Sorry, Facebook. Yeah.
But
sorry,
it'll still be cans.
Yeah, so look around. If you're in the Tacoma area, if you're anywhere in Washington probably, you should be able to find Tacoma Brewing, Mo Pale Ale, and Broken Window in cans. The Mo Pale Ale is delicious. This is like a perfect time of year for it, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the rain might possibly be letting up at some point in the next 90 days.
Which it did. This last week was incredible. We had, 70-degree sunny days all week until yesterday.
Oh, God. We got murdered in Portland. It went up to, 85, 86. I hated it. It was awful.
I think I got 78 one day.
I wore seersucker in April.
The 78 on the water is a different 78.
Yeah. This would be a perfect, this is a good barbecue beer. When all of your stupid friends are drinking Budweiser or Coors Light or whatever the hell they're drinking now, this is a great barbecue beer.
You're drinking Red's Apple Ale.
But yeah, so the psychological model, Lon Milo Duquette has that famous line that I think I've repeated a dozen times on this podcast, which is it's all in your head, you just have no idea how big your head is.
Yeah.
Which is great, but I mean, I guess I don't know. I guess there's part of me that almost wants to say that the drawing the line between monism and dualism might be fake. Kind of like dualism is sort of a model to deal with a united world, because consciousness is small by default, right? Like our default model, our default experience of consciousness is fairly self-contained and is mostly confined by our senses, and we have to work to expand outside of it. So it's almost like we're originally presented with this dualist model because the realization that dualism is wrong is the revelation. Like, that's what the initiation teaches you, is that...
But it doesn't for everyone.
It doesn't That's true.
Because otherwise, Gnosticism wouldn't exist. You wouldn't, like, a lot of these schools.
Well, Gnosticism died, maybe for a reason. And we should also acknowledge that not all Gnostics were dualists.
I don't know that you can make that. I don't.
There were so many different schools, right? You can't lump them all together. It would be irresponsible for us to do that as non-Christian scholars. But just from the little bit I've read, there were multiple schools of Gnosticism, and not all of them were dualists.
I have yet to see anything. I've seen stuff that flirts in the West.
Yeah.
Stuff that flirts with non-dualism, but I don't know that it
really
actually...
really haven't had that experience.
It all still has some smell of dualism.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which makes sense.
I would agree with that.
Because that's the mindset that we are trained in growing up in the West.
Yeah.
So,
and I guess, I mean, the whole like Renaissance cosmology or medieval cosmology, it all is based out of... Even Platonism, even Neoplatonism has like a dualist element to it where... But I mean, part of that in Neoplatonism or like, you know, the Platonic idea of the different realms is that you have to escape from that viewpoint. It's saying like you have to get out of that viewpoint and realize what is going on, and nobody who's still stuck in that viewpoint is going to believe you.
Yeah.
So...
But it still takes going through a dualistic system.
It's an escape from the dualistic system.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, it but seems to be only necessary.
So
in the
you
West.
Have escaped from a dualistic system a
Maybe.
Little bit. Or you're.
I feel like I have, but I don't.
Are you on the
I
verge?
Yeah.
I mean, because I have that same feeling, right? Like I feel like I have kind of escaped and kind of not escaped. But
it's a realization that I don't want to put words in your mouth, but for me, it's the sensation. It's. Oh, I've gone through studying these systems and all of this strife from this work, only to realize none of it was needed from the beginning. But since we grew up in the West, it was needed. But the counter realization again of realizing it wasn't.
Well, that's the thing. Is it?
It was. If it were not for.
It was needed because whatever was Matt had to get out of
right.
that version of Matt into the version of Matt you're in now.
But the realization.
Which has always existed.
Right.
You just weren't here.
But yeah, knowing that I didn't need all that to begin with, but it took going through all that to get there.
Yeah, because you didn't know that you were already the you that you could be.
Right.
And there's probably another you that you are not yet that is still waiting for you.
But those me's still aren't real.
Well, they're real. They're like, real to
they're
that
real.
You.
Yes.
Future you is laughing his ass off
yeah.
at us right now.
Probably. Ask me in 3 years, I'll probably swing back hard the other way. Like, I don't know.
I mean, it's way better than...
Is it?
Than Joey's monism. It's all bullshit.
It's all bullshit.
Maybe because when I was talking, you know, like, escaping from the psychological model of magic, especially when you start dealing with, like, grimoire stuff, which is all about communicating with... spirits. Not all of it, but there's a ton of communicating with spirits and like summoning spirits and sort of making these connections with them. There are a lot of nuances to the practice, which I don't want to get into right now, but the overall view of it, dealing with them as if they're external entities, like, I don't know, I don't necessarily feel like it's acknowledging dualism. I feel like it might be acknowledging the smallness of consciousness or the inability of consciousness to really acknowledge its own size and breadth. So I mean, maybe it is all in my mind and I just don't realize how big my mind is. Maybe my mind is just one realm of something much vaster. My own consciousness is one realm of something vaster. I don't really know how either of those work, but I have this vision, I have this just like consistent image of consciousness being, you know, when you if you stretch out your fingers and put all your fingertips into a bowl of water, like consciousness is just the tips of the fingers that are below the water. And everything else is all connected. Like, it's all the same stuff. It's just different experiences of itself or different experiences of something that are still all part of the same... They're all part of the same soup.
Yeah.
You know, it would have been better if I'd started out with a bowl of soup.
Well, I mean, because it is, because that...
Except that the hand is also made of soup.
The fingertips are your perception of consciousness. The hand is just the contents of the consciousness.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But still, even then, there is no rider, no person sitting behind the brain driving consciousness. All consciousness is just contents.
Okay, then tell me why...
Contents and input.
If...
Because, like, the example of... In patients where you had the corpus callosum severed,
mm-hmm.
separating the two hemispheres.
Yeah.
And in patients especially where you have language is developed a little more in the right hemisphere than it would normally be,
mm-hmm.
you, some of the experiments done where you ask, what do you want to be? Like, what's your ideal profession? The left hemisphere, which normally controls that stuff. Writes like, oh, I'm an engineer. The right hand will actually write out, like, I want to be a pilot. Consciousness can be bifurcated, which means there is no writer behind consciousness. All consciousness is just the contents of memory and sensory input. So there is no writer behind it. Like, the fact that it can be bifurcated says that there's no me observing behind the curtain.
There's no you there.
Yeah. It's just the contents of everything I've collected. Which is terrifying and freeing at the same time.
Yeah.
And that also ties in with the illusion of free will. The studies have been showing that even when you think you're making a decision, everything has already been decided before you're aware of that decision being made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which might not have anything to do with free will. That might have to do with either causality or the nature of time. Yeah, those are really weird things to think about.
Mm-hmm. They're terrifying at first.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, it's terrifying to think about, but... It is. It's one of those things where even when you just get a hint of it going on in your brain, and then you're in a place like this and you look around and you're like, oh, what does that mean? What is it? Is consciousness meaningless?
It doesn't have to, I mean, something can have meaning without having, without prescribing some kind of grander, overarching meaning for all of it. You can find meaning in it,
uh-huh.
personally, but there doesn't have to be some overarching meaning to the whole of everything.
Well, I mean...
There doesn't have to be.
It doesn't have to be.
There can be, but odds are there probably isn't.
How do you calculate those odds? You can't say odds are there probably isn't. You can't calculate that. You don't know that for sure.
I don't. But there's nothing to say, there's less pointing towards there being an overarching cause and meaning to it all than there is that's...
Which I really think, I think that just points back to this argument that, like, or to this idea that consciousness is a way of the universe observing itself. Maybe poorly, maybe just an aspect, maybe there are other parts, I mean... We're probably not the only observers or the only way of observing or the only way of being observed. But it's one way.
No, we are. I mean, because there is no separation. We are existence observing itself.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that that necessarily means that there's...
I'm not saying that there's others, but there aren't. But we're definitely not the best way to observe the universe.
No.
My Alchemical Bromance is sponsored by Miskatonic Books. Miskatonic Books is an online bookstore that focuses on rare, limited edition, and custom-made books of the highest quality. They specialize in books on the occult, ceremonial magic, Freemasonry, Rosicrucianism, Hermeticism, and other topics of interest to you, our listeners. Check them out on the web at miskatonicbooks.com. Okay, welcome to part 2 of Maybe it's not part two. Matt, where are we?
We're at McCormick Forest Park in Gig Harbor. It's an old growth park with primitive trails that I really enjoy.
It's super pretty. I have to say, I haven't seen any... I mean, this stuff here isn't old growth yet.
No.
But there's going to be old growth coming up.
Yeah.
That's cool. This is our first attempt recording outdoors on a trail like this. Last time I tried recording outdoors, I kept holding this thing up to Matt to talk, and it was not recording. You remember that?
No, I don't. We tried walking and recording?
No, we were brewing.
Oh, yeah. But that was loud with all the gas and whatnot.
Yeah, however, I've discovered a lot of editing tricks, and if I had had the input on this turned up high enough, it wouldn't have mattered.
That helps, setting levels.
Yeah.
And actually hitting record.
Two beginner tricks. Two beginner tips.
Hit record.
Tips for beginner podcasters. Hit record, check your levels. So how often do you come out to this trail?
This winter I didn't come out that much, but in the summertime, almost every day. With the exception of the weekends, because Sunday is my big hiking day where I'll go out to the Olympics. But I try to every day. Now that the weather's nice and we actually have daylight, when I finish working, I can come out.
There's a cedar. Yeah, I really miss this in Portland. I know it's available, like, we have Forest Park. And there's Mount Tabor and Powell Butte. But I'm lazy and I don't have a car. Okay, so we're deep in the woods.
Yes.
And I don't know how much of this is going to make it into the, if the background noise is being picked up here, but there's a super horny bird.
And the sound of the traffic from Highway 16.
Yeah, which I guess is one of the things that's super disappointing about hiking in any urban area is you always get traffic noise in the background. But
and this butts up to a women's prison.
Oh, we should pick up some hitchhikers. But I guess one thing that you know, if the traffic noise is constant enough, you can just pretend it's the wind going through the trees, right?
Yeah, yeah. And there's a certain point where we'll go down, it'll get loud, and we'll go up a hill, and the, like within one turn, like a 20-yard stretch, the traffic noise disappears.
Oh, cool. Well, that's neat. All right, so I have a question.
Yes.
So you've mentioned that you've been sort of using like hiking as kind of like a spiritual practice or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, do you do any sort of... Like, is there a walking meditation or something of that that you do? Or is it just kind of like a... How do you spiritually express yourself in the woods legally?
I was just catching on this pollen on the... Okay. Most of them, really, it's just basic mindfulness. But if I find a particularly interesting or large or old tree, mm-hmm. I'll stop and do a breathing exercise
mm-hmm.
on the tree.
Yeah, and just sort of...
Placing my hands on the tree, picturing breathing my CO2
mm-hmm.
into the tree and inhaling the oxygen out of the tree. Just a way of connecting.
Yeah, and grounding. Yeah, that sounds like a good practice. Do you ever spend very much time learning how to identify plants and trees and that sort of stuff?
No, but I want to, and that's why I was really excited yesterday to find a book on edible plants in the Northwest. Mm-hmm. But I want to, like, that was the first thing I wanted to learn. But beyond, then after I learned some of the edible plants that I see on the hikes, I want to learn more about all the other plants.
Have you thought about doing, like, mushrooming?
Yeah, I have. I actually went to Mount St. Helens.
That's right.
And foraged for mushrooms with the Mount St. Helens Institute.
It was a lot of
fun.
That?
It was really fun. We found so many chanterelles and lobster mushrooms, and just had a giant bag. It was awesome.
That sounds cool. I wonder if this bird is going to have any luck.
Oh, and I did find an Animita muscaria when I was hiking on the coast.
Yeah?
A couple falls ago.
You didn't eat it, though.
No. I actually left it. I was really bummed out. I was like, I should have taken it and dried it, but I thought, no, this is too cool. I think other people need to be able to see this, so mm-hmm. I just left it.
I've come across those in the woods pretty often. They're actually out here. In Southern Oregon, I never saw them.
Yeah.
But they're kind of scary to me. Like, those are toxic, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just feed them to a reindeer and wait to collect the reindeer's pee.
Well, let's go find a reindeer.
Sweet.
Okay, so we went downhill, and then we went uphill.
And then we went downhill.
And then we went downhill.
And we went uphill again.
Yeah, and now we are at Jackrabbit's Palace, or it looks like Jackrabbit's Palace. Matt's getting a picture that we can share. And he was right, we've come up to a place where the traffic noise is pretty much cut off. Tons of birds in the background. And Matt, I don't know if you know this, I'm going to give you a dumbest plant identification tip ever.
Okay.
You see this kind of pine cone, it's long and narrow, it's kind of soft, and it looks like it has a bunch of snake tongues poking out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Douglas fir. So when you see these, you know that you're standing into Douglas firs. And then also in here, there's a ton of cedar, I think red cedar. And I haven't seen any other pine cones, so...
That's mostly what we have up here is just Doug fir. We don't really see a ton of cedar.
Well, there's a ton of cedar in here.
I meant, like, compared to...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
South.
Yeah, and I don't know. I feel like I've read articles about other conifers that are really prevalent up here. But Doug fir's doing a good job just sort of taking over everything. It's spreading like crazy.
Lodgepole pine.
Lodgepole pine. There's a lot of lodgepole pine in eastern Oregon. My dad hates lodgepole pine. So you're going to go backpacking.
Yeah, next weekend. I don't know where yet. But
this
somewhere
is your second backpacking trip.
Yes.
Give us some things that you learned after your first backpacking trip.
The first and biggest thing I learned was don't be a jackass and think you have to carry all of your water in. Buy a water filter. Like backpackers actually do, and only carry a little bit of water in.
Uh-huh.
And like map out where water is, where you're going to be staying.
Mm-hmm.
And just filter your water there instead of lugging in 3 gallons like a jackass.
Even if you don't want a water filter, you can always get iodine tablets and you can boil water.
Yes.
It's way better. I mean, nobody should... You said you carried in 3 gallons.
Yeah.
That's 25 pounds.
Yeah. And I carried, the other thing I learned, that I carried a bunch of stuff because I thought, you know, once I got to camp, I would get, not bored, but I'd want stuff to do.
So what did you bring?
I brought like a couple of books and I forgot what else. No, I mean, not a whole lot of stuff, but stuff I wouldn't bring this time because I found that I was actually, by the time I finished dinner, I was more or less ready to go to sleep.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I guess when I go backpacking, I usually bring one book. And I try to keep it small. So maybe sometimes it'll be like a book of poetry or something I can read more than once.
That's a good idea.
Almost all the backpacking I do is out in the desert. So I usually carry 3 liters of water. But if I was in a place as wet as this, I would probably only do 2 liters. Because I don't think you sweat as much in the forest as you do in the desert.
It depends on the hike. Yeah. Usually I do pretty...
tough hikes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess
pretty big elevation changes.
You just always sweat.
Yeah.
God.
What I did learn, another thing I learned after my 40-something hike, bandanas. Bandanas are great.
Oh, my God. Bandanas is the best thing in the world.
It wasn't as big of a deal when I had hair.
Yeah, but when you lose your hair.
Oh, yeah.
It was a
nightmare.
That's one thing that I discovered after, you know, growing up. I had lots of hair when I went hiking as a kid, but as an adult, there's nothing to stop the sweat.
Nothing.
So, for me, I'm a hat wearer. So, what I discovered is that no matter... what the temperature is, no matter how, a wool hat when you're hiking will always beat a straw hat.
Yes.
Because straw hats, they don't soak up enough liquid.
No.
And it'll just kill you. Hello again.
Hello. The other thing I was glad that I brought was a hammock. Super glad I brought a hammock. Because it gave me a cool place to hang out.
Yeah, you've mentioned that a couple times. I've never...
But I think... Okay.
I'm always a tent guy. I love tents.
I like tents too, but I need to this week. I'm going to try out staying a night in the hammock in my backyard and see how I sleep, because I may not take the tent at all this time.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of backpackers do that now. They don't even mess with...
Yeah, it's interesting watching you learn how to backpack now. Because when I learned, I was, you know, it was in the early 80s.
Mm.
And backpacking tech hadn't turned into the stuff that is now.
The ultralight thing probably didn't really...
There was no ultralight.
Yeah.
Everything was heavy. But, you know, I learned from my dad. So my dad, who's, you know, in his 70s now and is still backpacking, every year when we go backpacking, he's all like, oh my God, I found this brand new thing. And it's crazy because since everything's been going ultralight and we have less and less weight to carry, he now brings a chair.
Backpacks. It's a little tiny folding backpacking chair. And it's awesome. We all fight over it.
With the chair. That's why the hammock's great, because it folds down nothing, weighs nothing, and you've got a nice place to... But if you're in the desert, you're going to be...
Yeah, you... Well, I mean, you know, the high desert has trees.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's tricky finding good tent spots in the desert, because you don't want it to be in the sun if you can help it, and there's all sorts of stuff that you try to... Yeah. Well, all right. So now you know how to find Doug Fir.
Yes.
And you know how to not carry all your water in. And I'm really curious to hear how the hammock thing goes, because that sounds cool.
Yeah, it'd be nice to... I mean, my tent only weighs 3 pounds, but it'd still be nice to...
How much does the hammock weigh?
If I had to guess, 8 ounces. I mean, the hammock straps probably weigh... maybe a pound, but I could buy lighter versions of those too.
Yeah,
but still, it's less room in the pack.
Yeah, and because
I intentionally chose a smaller pack too for my, because I was like, oh, I get a 65 liter.
And would you get a 40 liter?
50.
50 liter. Okay.
Yeah, because my thought was, if I get a 65, I'm going to fill it with more crap. So I wanted to like force myself to limit what I put in my pack.
I'm really good at carrying as little as possible.
You've got a lot more experience, because it's just...
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's one of the things, right? You just leave more stuff behind every time. You're like, well, I never needed this before.
Because I was scared, because I wanted to do this for years, but it's like, oh, I'm going to get eaten by a bear or a mountain lion. So that's what kept me from going out. And then I thought, oh, I'm going to have all this stuff, because I'm going to be out there overnight. What if this happens? What if this happens? And I've noticed that with my day hiking, my pack, I have less and less stuff in that too now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but for me, like, even on a, you know, this little hike we're doing here, if I was going on this on my own, I would still have a pack with water and stuff, water. In it, extra socks.
Yeah, you know, that was something I learned that came in handy really quick.
Yeah,
extra sock thing, because they work great as gloves if you don't have gloves.
Yeah, yeah. Also check the weather where you're going. Yeah. That's another good one. All right, well let's see what else this magnificent forest has to offer us.
All right.
Okay, it's time for more beer.
Yes.
So we've explored. We've had adventures.
We went on the walk.
We went on the walk, which you guys have heard about already, probably.
Then we went for lunch at Tide's Tavern in Gig Harbor on the water.
Yep, I had a burger and...
I had pizza.
It was pretty good. And
really good Pilsner.
What was the name of that Pilsner?
Ziggy Zaggy.
Ziggy Zaggy.
From Silver City.
So, and where's that?
It's in Silverdale, which is north of Bremerton.
Which is in Washington State.
Yes. It's across the water from Seattle.
Cool. Oh, Bremerton, where the ferry is.
Yeah.
Okay, 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 yeah, yeah. That's an adventure that we've had before. Okay. Yeah. And then so it was Matt's birthday on Friday, and I brought him a special beer. Do you want to open your birthday present?
Sure. That's a tub. I haven't looked at this yet, but is this Abominable?
No. Oh. This is the DOA.
Oh, DOA.
So this beer, the Hopworks DOA, the Deluxe Organic Ale, they stopped making it like last year or the year before, which I was very sad about. And some of the regulars, like some of the old timers, were very sad about. But it apparently didn't sell well, except amongst very few people. It's an American strong ale. It's kind of hoppy, kind of strong, kind of malty. I told Matt a number of times that this is like my favorite beer. I don't know that there's anything super exceptional about it, but it's extra drinkable. It's extra delicious. And a couple Mug Club pints of this will totally make your whole day. Because it's kind of strong.
It sounds like... This is only 7% though.
Well...
I mean, that adds up.
Yeah, it adds up.
Yeah.
If you have two of them, that's 14%.
Wait, is that how that works?
All right. So we're going to open this.
Nice.
All right. So the thing is, since they stopped making it a while ago, I don't really remember what it used to taste like very well. a couple of the... original bartenders helped brew this batch. Huh. So they just did one batch. So you might never get to have it again after this.
It smells really good.
What are you smelling it, do you think? My nose isn't as good as yours.
Caramel?
Mm-hmm. A little vegetal quality behind the caramel.
I smell some alcohol.
I don't smell much alcohol.
And that's a beer I remember. It kind of has that like malty, roasty quality to it, kind of nutty mm-hmm. or something like that.
It's caramely without being sweet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a hint of sweetness, but it's not sweet.
Mm-hmm.
It finishes dry.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really nice beer.
I know. I love this thing. I got two bottles at the Hopworks 10th anniversary party, and they were like, there's a 4-bottle limit. And I'm like, well, I'll just get two. I don't want to push my luck.
Thanks for sharing this.
Woohoo.
Happy birthday.
The color.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Really cool color.
Yeah, kind of a nice amber. Yeah, full flavored. This is my Sunday afternoon read a book beer. I'd go up to Hopworks, get a pint of this, sit at the bar, read a book.
Nice.
Yeah.
I bet that's nice living so close to
a brewery. Yeah. Well, I mean, two breweries, right? Because I also have Gigantic right there.
Yeah.
Which is pretty close. I want to go back to the monism versus dualism thing. Because, I didn't feel super prepared yesterday when we were talking about it. And one of the things that was kind of bothering me was your assertion that, like, the Western mystery tradition has always been dualist. Because it just didn't feel that way to me. So I went and started looking, and it turns out that the issue is way more complicated than we were talking about. I mean, dualism is fairly... There's more than one form of dualism, first of all, but it's almost always just sort of like a separation. Like, here's one thing, here's another thing.
Yeah.
And the Gnostics, or most of the Gnostics, are the most famous example because they've got, like, this concept of, like, the material world or the material creation being the output of the demiurge. Mm-hmm. So, like, super gnarly, bad crap. This is the muck. We live in the muck. But the pre-Socratic philosophers, were monists, as was Plato. I don't know that it's a definition of monism that you'll be happy with, because it turns out that monism is split into different categories, and one of them is an emanatory monism, where everything is seen as one, but it's like an emanation of the one. So that would be like Neoplatonism, or like Kabbalah works that way, where you're saying that everything is one, you just have this illusion that it's not that way, that you have to break out of.
Yeah.
Which is like, you know, like Plato's cave sort of deal. And then another one, and this, I don't know if anybody thinks this way anymore, but one of the types of monism is the single substance school, which says that everything might seem different, but it all arises from one substance.
From the prima materia.
But it's even weirder than prima materia, because before prima materia, some of the pre-Socratic philosophers, one of them, Thales or something of that, I don't know, I don't speak ancient Greek fluently. he believed that everything was made of water. Like everything... Like the he thought there were four elements, but that the primary element was water, and that everything arose out of water. So everything in the universe was made of water somehow.
So he's an early string theorist.
Yeah, yeah.
So, so he would still be laughed at today.
We call it the soggy spaghetti theory. and then the other one is like pantheism, or is sort of a monist view, where there is only one thing, and that one thing is the universe, and that universe is divine, and we're all subdivisions inside it that just don't realize that we're one thing. Right? Is that sort of the one you were describing?
It may be closer to the first.
The emanation one?
Though I'm still... Even the idea of emanation still creates... an idea of separation,
but it's the illusion of separation.
Yeah.
So it's we have an illusory separation that we live in that we have to crack out of. But I mean, Well, okay, so then maybe you can talk about your...
I mean, that kind of makes sense, because, like I was talking about yesterday, as far as the analogy with the body.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because you can get super reductionist, at what point, if you go down to the cellular level and the bacteria that make up you, at what point do you become you?
Right, right.
But well, there's never any...
Like, how many brain cells do you need to have? Like, you were talking about the bifurcated consciousness, mm-hmm. right? Like, if your consciousness can be split in half, and there are two parts of you that have different opinions that aren't aware of each other, which of those is you? And are they more you when they're talking to each other than when they're separate?
I don't think they are.
They're just different yous?
Yeah, but even then, they're still not a you.
Hi, Zoe.
Oh, that's Zoe.
Zoe's our new co-host.
She's joined us at the table, has a lot to say.
Zoe, what do you think? Monism or dualism? Oh, she thinks this comes. She thinks this is boring.
She subscribes to Joey's.
Yeah. It's all bullshit. Ism. I feel like this beer, as you drink it, there's kind of this... There is some sweetness to it, and it's kind of like almost fruity.
Mm-hmm.
And the hops... The hops are... Zoe, are you allowed on the table?
No. But this is kind of a... So we've been worried.
Mm-hmm.
Amy's now an animal pharma, and so she's been doing a lot of research, reading a lot of journals and stuff lately.
Yeah.
And we were worried because at the same time Zoe had to get some vaccinations about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And Amy read a paper at the same time talking about how some vaccinations are causing severe mood changes in dogs. And Zoe has not been Zoe for the last 2 weeks. And the fact that she jumped up there and was just talking is kind of a good sign.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, because she has not been herself.
So one weird thing, like coming up to Matt's house, his dogs are really excited dogs. They love to bark. And just like, I could walk into the room. I could walk into the bathroom, be gone for 5 minutes, open the door, walk back into the room, and the dogs would bark at me all over again. But they haven't been that bad this time.
No, like, Zoe's usually the worst.
Yeah,
worst one about barking at people. But no, she's been great.
Yeah, Barley the witch dog has been barking at me more than Zoe.
He has. He says, own issues this weekend. All right, you can get off the table. Can you get down? Nope. All right, whatever.
All right. Oh, Zoe wants attention. So of all the beers that we've tried this weekend, which one has been your favorite, do you think? Man.
Obviously, the Troishka from Fort George is always going to...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, we didn't even... Oh,
excuse me.
The Troishka from Fort George.
Uh-huh.
Oh, jeez. No, that one ended up. That part had never broken before.
I didn't do it.
See,
Matryoshka. Okay, so Matryoshka, I got a photo of that, but that's a barrel-aged stout.
Yes, from Fort
that
George.
That thing was incredible. That was a delicious beer.
Super, super good.
And then I really liked, what we went to Engine House 9, and we had...
the American Wild Ale with raspberries and cherries.
Oh, I forgot about that.
And there was also the Duel. Hazy IPAs that were the collaboration between E9 and Holy Mountain.
And those were the
Ten of Swords and the Five of Swords.
Yeah, those were really intense. I really liked the Five of Swords. It was a pretty standard hazy. The Ten of Swords was an ass kicker. Like, it was boozy. It was like super over the top in every characteristic, I felt like. It was really hoppy, really boozy.
I think I like the Five of Swords better between the two.
Yeah, me too. The Ten of Swords, like, that little sample was all I wanted to drink of it. I mean, it was a good experience, but it was just too rich and strong to have a lot of.
And then the Cedar Deluxe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The Cedar H beer at Tacoma Brewing. It's probably between that beer and...
Oh, man.
I'm going to call it a three-way tie between that, the Duel, which mm-hmm. was the American Wild Ale from Engine House 9, and Matryoshka.
You know, I also had that that Belgian Saison at Pints and...
Peaks and Pints?
Peaks and Pints.
In Proctor?
Peaks and Pints in Proctor. And that thing was pretty outstanding. I really liked that a lot.
That's good.
I wrote the name down.
The beer I got wasn't memorable. I don't recall.
You got a pale ale of some sort.
Yeah. That was probably my mistake. But I was trying to start the day off easy.
Well, and you know, a good pale ale is a good pale ale. Okay, so that one that I had was the Saison Backsteinwinkel from Brauerei Kasematen.
Brothers Karamazov.
I think it means the brothers of the cheese mother.
And we would have had some beers at Three Maggots in Olympia, but every single beer on the menu, save the ESB, was a Northeast IPA.
I know, that was really disappointing.
Which, I love Northeast IPAs, but we'd already had several that day, and I wanted to try something else, so we just left.
Well, we went to the McMinimans, Spec Pub?
The Spar.
The Spar Pub. That place is really cool. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember what we drank there.
I had the peaches and cream ale, it was good, but it wasn't anything to write home about.
Yeah, and whatever I had wasn't that exciting either. It was good though. I had a pilsner, maybe
solid, like well made, solid beer. It's just nothing.
Well, and one thing I got to say about McMinimans is they are getting better. I don't know if you were here during the dark years.
No, but
McMinimans used to have a horrible reputation.
I first had McMinimans 3 years ago, and the beer was ram-like. Yeah. It's like kind of phoned in dad beers.
Yeah, yeah. It's and a lot of their beer still is like.
They're better made though.
Yeah, they've definitely been getting better, and still like my favorite McMinimans beer is their Kris Kringle, which is a winter seasonal, like a Christmas beer. It's kind of a spiced strong ale. It's pretty good.
Sounds good.
We'll have to look for it when that time of year comes. We have to make it through the difficult summer years. Summer months, though. Feels like years.
Difficult for you. It's great for me here. Oof.
this has been a really fun trip up here. Good beers, good food.
Really good time.
Yeah.
And I figured out what we saw yesterday at the Arts Walk. It was called Procession of the Species.
What was it?
It's just part of the Arts Walk. I guess people dress up as different plant and animals.
Did we talk about the Arts Walk at all?
I don't think we did.
We went to Olympia. Oh, yeah. So we've mentioned a couple places in Olympia, including Three Magnets and McMinniman Spar Cafe. Those are both in Olympia, Washington. And
Because we drove to meet Seven.
Seven Bremner, who we interviewed a few episodes ago. Mm-hmm.
And we as soon as we rolled into Olympia, we realized, all the streets are blocked off and they're packed with people.
Well, see, she told me... I guess I was under the impression that it was just going to be an art walk. Like, you know, a bunch of galleries have some stuff up and a bunch of yuppies are like walking around drinking free wine or something.
Yeah.
But it was a festival.
But
it was
still still lives of like wine glasses.
Oh, yeah. Or like
and corks
or
kind
like
of thing.
Poorly done abstract art or, you know, like
sailboats.
Hippie housewife art or whatever you want to call it, you know, happy little clouds and sailboats. And here's my watercolor. But we actually didn't really get to see any art.
Yeah.
It was just this crazy
parade of people dressed as mushrooms and trees. And
it was packed.
Praying mantises. And
yeah. Streets were lined. There was tons of stuff going on. It was pretty fun.
It was really cool.
And what was that coffee shop? Burial Grounds.
Yes.
Definitely. So we went there twice.
Yes.
Yes.
It's not good.
So that was pretty cool. We should have...
What else? Did we do anything else? We went to a bookstore.
Oh, yeah.
Where you bought a book you thought you had in a dream.
I did, yeah. I had a dream about this book. Sometimes you gotta, you know, follow your dreams, they say. Follow your dreams.
It was nice to meet Seven.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It was just for a minute, but it was pretty fun.
Yeah.
We had a good time. We had adventures. We didn't even go to Seattle.
No.
Didn't even need to.
No.
You hear that, Seattle people? We don't need you.
Though I do still want to take you to Cloudburst. And if you live near Seattle and you haven't been to Cloudburst, you should go.
All right, next trip up here, we're going to go to Cloudburst and maybe go on another hike. You think your hammocks are dry?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, maybe we should go sit in the hammocks.
That sounds good.
I think we should sit in the hammocks and abandon the podcast crowd to whatever boring stuff they're doing.
Sounds good to me.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Oh, Yahtzee.
Hilarious.
Thank you for listening to My Alchemical Bromance. You can find us on the web at myalchemicalbromance.com. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher or your favorite podcasting app. I hope that if you like us, if you're enjoying us, that you subscribe, that you go onto iTunes and give us a review, and that you do all that great stuff, and that you come back next time. I'm not going to be able to do that.